I need to escape my surroundings. Canada was very much like a safe haven as a queer person. I felt like I was, you know, finally able to express who I am and what I want and what my needs are. And that's, you know, it's a great feeling, obviously, to have that acceptance.
Welcome to Yalla Let's Talk. We're going to have some fun, but also helpful conversations. So today we have an incredible guest. We have Miss Halal Bey. Miss Halal Bey was a contestant on Canada's Drag Race. She is a queen and she is slain. And so please welcome Halal Bey.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Miss Halal Bey, I think the first question I want to ask you is just growing up, like when you were young, what did you really want to become? Like really young?
Oh, I mean, I've always wanted to become an artist of some sort. And so the visual arts were always really inspiring to me. I really liked musicals and movies and stuff like that. And so interest in film, interest in visual arts was just present in my life for a very long time. And I think that kind of drove me into wanting to do drag at this point, right? But prior to that, I was a visual artist. I did paintings, drawings, sculptures.
Wow. So when you were young, you were always a creative, artistic person. And so what inspired you to start drag?
I guess I've always found an interest in sort of like gender bending and like sort of playing a part, right? And so when I came to Canada, I started to see a lot more drag here, and it really spoke to me in a much more personal level. So I started to realize that, you know, I'm much more fluid than I am just like a cis male. And so I started to just experiment with that and experiment with gender as play. Mm-hmm. And then it wasn't until I moved to Toronto in 2013 where I started to see places that I would go to and frequent where there's a lot of performers and drag artists that didn't represent me, didn't represent the people that I was friends with or looked like me. And I wanted to, you know, create a space for people like that. And so that's why I started doing drag.
I love that representation that you're trying to create. And it's incredible to see, you know, you enter a space and you feel like there isn't necessarily, you don't feel represented. And as opposed to just dwelling on it, you decided to change the narrative on your own.
Exactly, yeah.
And you mentioned you didn't grow up here. Can you tell us a little more where you grew up and how was your transition to come to Canada?
Sure, yeah. I was born in Alexandria in Egypt to Egyptian and Palestinian parents. I grew up there for a little while, and then we moved to Kuwait for like my formative years. So I think it was like a good 10 years before I left. I think I left when I was 18. Left Kuwait, came to Montreal, and the rest is history.
Awesome. So actually, funny enough, I also grew up in Kuwait.
Nice.
Yeah, so I find that in Kuwait, it's a very interesting society in that, at least from where I kind of grew up, where there might be some, you know, different gender expressions, but it's really kind of like not talked about, but it still exists. And I just wanted to know your experience growing up as a genderly fluid, not necessarily a cis male, in Kuwait.
Well, I mean, I don't think I came to the realization of my fluidity until I was an adult, to be honest. So like, I mean, when I was younger, I was still battling with just trying to be accepted as a queer person and like a gay person, right? And so, as you said, yeah, there is very much like an underground queer scene in pretty much all the Middle East, right? It really is the systemic structure that exists around it that doesn't allow it to be present and more celebrated. I mean, Kuwait was an interesting experience because, you know, not only are you queer, you know, you feel like you're not part of society, but you're also an immigrant. And I don't know how you felt, but like, I felt like in Kuwait, they treat others as second-class citizens, even other Arabs. So I never really felt at home there. And it always felt like I was in limbo for a while.
I can definitely relate. It's like there's a caste system, but it's not really a caste system. And it's...
Tea.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
It's very much that.
It is. And how did you find it coming here to Canada versus growing up in the Middle East?
Well, I mean, I grew up sort of like Western educated. Like I went to American schools in Kuwait and stuff like that.
Did we go to the same school?
Yay, colonialism. but I went to UAS. I don't know where you
are. I did go to UAS. Bitch. I went there for 1 year.
Look at that. We went to the same school.
That is so cool.
Yeah. I went there for a good amount of time. I was there from middle school to high school.
Very cool.
And yeah, so like obviously, you know, being Western educated, being queer, whatever, when I was like, okay, I need to escape my surroundings. Canada was very much like a safe haven as a queer person. I felt like I was, you know, finally able to express who I am and what I want and what my needs are. And that's, you know, it's a great feeling, obviously, to have that acceptance. But of course, there's always going to be sort of, you know, the other side of it where, you know, you still feel ostracized because of, you know, where you come from, who you are and stuff like that. So it is kind of, it's a balance, right? And I'm lucky enough to be light-skinned. And that makes me, you know, get away with a lot and have a lot of privilege in our society. But, you know, my brother, who's a lot darker than I am, is not afforded those same privileges. You know what I mean?
I appreciate the fact that you acknowledge that there's different levels of privilege even being here.
Of course.
And I want to go back to just kind of like coming from Kuwait to here, because a lot of times you hear parents, especially when it comes to the topic of LGBTQ, queer, it's like they think if people come to Canada, that's when they, you know, transform and change and become.
Sure, yeah.
And I want to know more about your thoughts on that.
I mean, that's the age-old tale of like nurture and versus nature, right? But I mean, was I able to accept myself for who I am faster? Maybe. You know, was I given the space to explore what I needed? Possibly. You know, these are all like questions that still remain. But I feel like no matter what, I would have still struggled with those same feelings, still struggled with your identity and the way you feel in space. And it's not like, you know, living in the Middle East, you're like devoid of media that is coming in from everywhere in the world. Like you see it, you know? And so growing up, seeing different images of people living their lives, you know, outside of the Middle East, you undoubtedly will start to, you know, want to find people in those communities, you know, as you said, like that underground community, find people that you know and you're safe with and stuff like that. So I don't believe that, you know, you change because you are in a society that's more accepting. I think that you're always going to be that person. You're just allowed to express it.
I think the key word here is expression and being safe and feeling safe to express who you are and unapologetically express and be yourself.
Exactly.
I wonder what made you become more comfortable with your own gender identity and your sexuality.
I mean, it's definitely a long journey, but I think that the most important thing for me was my chosen family that I was able to make here. I have amazing, you know, friends that have supported me throughout this entire journey, who have always been there for me, who are, you know, my community that you sort of build when you're starting from scratch, kind of, right? And so, yeah, they were really the ones who, you know, anytime I had a decision or, you know, made an effort to express something, they were super accepting, super open, very accommodating. So if it wasn't for them, I definitely wouldn't be the same person I am today.
I love that. And I love the fact that you mentioned chosen family, because for people who don't know what a chosen family is, it's like the concept of your friends can become your family and you can choose who becomes very close to you.
Exactly.
And it's really creating that support and ecosystem for yourself to flourish. And so I want to transition now to just diving more into your own family and how they might perceive drag. How was it the conversation letting them know that you wanted to do drag?
Well, it wasn't really a conversation in terms of like, you know, asking them or anything like that. By the time that I started to do drag, I had been out for a good decade. Mm-hmm. So they, you know, they had finally accepted who I am and have come around. And like, honestly, I give it up to my parents, like as, even though they are secular Muslims, but like Muslims nonetheless, for them to, you know, do a complete 180 and be extremely supportive has been something that I didn't think was going to happen in my lifetime. And then when I started to do drag, I sort of just like, you know, told them that I was doing drag. My mom very much took it as just like, you know, an artistic sort of practice and creation. My dad wasn't as supportive, but I think once he saw how talented I was and that how much, you know, I was actually able to, you know, make a difference and create stuff. And I remember, I think I did like a Mercedes commercial a few years ago. And that's like the time when he was like, oh shit, like you're in a commercial for Mercedes. Oh, that's pretty cool. And then he's kind of started to accept it a lot more because he was like, oh, it's also lucrative. I think for them, it's always like, you know, you're the artist that's always broke and whatever, right?
When they see money, they're like, okay, this is validation.
Exactly. It's like for them, it's like, oh, this is like a legit career, you know? Oh, he's like, you know, they're doing something, yeah. You know? They're on TV. It's crazy. Like, so for them, it's now it's a different story than what it was before, for sure.
What I find very interesting in what you just said right now is that you were surprised how your parents would accept you and to at this point, really just like, you didn't even have a conversation. You just let them know.
Yeah.
Do you find that within like the Middle Eastern ethnic communities, there is that fear to come out? That's an additional layer than just any other community.
Of course. I mean, you know, there's, especially Middle Eastern culture, obviously there's a, you know, a huge sort of stigma around homosexuality and queerness and stuff like that. You know, colonialism has fucked up other countries, like other brown countries, and their reflection of what queerness is, because those countries thrived with queer people like before, right? Colonialism. I think that there definitely is a sort of added layer, just because, again, there isn't a support system. There isn't any recognition by any forms of government. You know, it really is hard to have, you know, minority parents accept stuff like that, because they're just entrenched in a very different environment, and that environment isn't conducive to, you know, supporting that element of your life, right? So I think there's a large fear of it, and especially for, you know, sort of queer immigrants, because I think that's even an added layer of stress, because you're like, well, I'm here all alone. What if I come out and they don't talk to me anymore? And then like, you don't have anybody that you can kind of lean on. So I definitely think that there is a higher sort of anxiety that comes with coming out.
Yeah, the fear of abandonment is definitely a real issue. I can see and appreciate that. At the same time, I appreciated the fact that you acknowledge that there is a different upbringing, and it's quite unfortunate because you do see, you know, legal systems there, the media there, and just even when that topic comes, how people react. And so there is a long way. I think there's a long way for the whole world to become more progressive and accepting.
Sure.
And I think over in the Middle East, there is still a long way. I want to go back into acceptance and just talking about what really made you accept yourself throughout your journey.
The ability to sort of come to terms with, you know, like what I was doing wasn't harming anyone. And if it's not harming anyone, then why is it wrong? And why should I be ashamed of it? You know, and why should I keep it hidden if it's not, you know, makes me happy, doesn't hurt anybody else. And so it really was a process of learning and unlearning a lot of behaviors and a lot of teachings and a lot of things that you grow up with, you know, as a Muslim living in the Middle East. And so having to shed a lot of that fear, that stigma, that idea that, you know, you're somehow harming yourself, it all played into this notion of, you know, trying to become just like a more whole person and just accepting myself for who I am.
It's a journey, and it's a process of learning and unlearning and relearning.
Exactly. And it still goes on, right? Like you're continuously, it's a lifelong thing. And if you're not, then you're just stagnant. You're not going anywhere.
I appreciate that perspective, because it is, we're always evolving as humans and as people. And going back to right now, you went to accepting. And now celebrating and seeing it as an artistic form of expression.
Yeah.
Where do you see yourself with drag in a couple of years?
I mean, my drag is obviously very political. It's all about community building. That is my shtick. That's my whole goal as a drag performer. It's definitely not like a full-time gig for me. I use it as a platform, as, you know, of expression and of storytelling. Mm-hmm. And so it would be great to, you know, continue maybe even like doing like lectures on certain issues, traveling the country, like educating people on things that matter to, you know, our culture and our people. And I think that would be really special. And I think like even starting a political career is something that is very much has been an idea in my mind for a very long time.
I love that.
Yeah.
Can you tell us something that surprised you about the show?
Something that surprised me about the show. I mean, I've never been on like TV before. So it's when you get there, it's kind of like a really, it's bizarre because yeah. It's at the end of the day, like, yes, you know, we say it's a competition, but it's a TV show, you know? And so there's a lot of things that you kind of have to do to be, you know, like the way that they ask you to present and to do stuff and to, you know, just the behind the scenes of the inner workings of it is something that was very eye-opening to me. I was like, whoa, okay, this is like, it's a whole different beast than what you think it is.
I love that. And what do you wish people knew about drag that people don't know about?
I mean, I think one thing that people tend to forget about drag is that it's for everyone, and it's not limited to, you know, cis men dressing up as women. There's women who do drag, and there's drag kings, there's gender non-binary performers, and it really is a play on gender. It's a play on, you know, trying to break down those barriers of the binary. And so we shouldn't really just limit it to one form of drag, you know?
I appreciate that, because it's when people think of drag, they always stereotype, right? It's like, this is what drag is. This is who does drag. And even like looking at you right now, you've managed to have that play, and you're defying even what drag is. And
right.
I remember you speaking about like even wearing a mustache and being in drag. Can you tell us a little more about why you decided to do that? Because I found that very interesting.
Yeah, well, I mean, it really is just that, right? It's kind of sort of blurring the lines between what, you know, a woman or a man should look like. Obviously, as Middle Easterns, a lot of us are very known to be hairy. And as a gender fluid person, I was like, well, this is something that I want to carry into my art. Like, I don't have to take off my hairiness or my mustache to be this like beautiful drag creature. You know, you can like, a lot of women have beards, you know what I mean? And
facts, yeah.
So I feel like, again, it's very much sort of stripping away this notion of a binary and making it so that, you know, gender, just as sexuality is on a spectrum. And, you know, people kind of move through it through their entire lives. And I just wanted to present that. I wanted to embody that.
I appreciate it. And you're doing a fantastic job, might I say.
Thank you so much.
Like from the clothes, from the persona, everything.
Thank you.
And I want to go just dive deeper as well into mentioning gender fluidity, because this is a concept, especially if we have an audience that might not necessarily understand what being gender fluid means.
Right.
Can you tell us a little more about your experience and how you've come to terms with your identity?
Yeah.
And how do you identify yourself as well?
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, the idea of gender fluidity, or sort of the theory of gender fluidity, is that it very much resembles sexuality, where you have, you know, like a spectrum of presentation. And I think a lot of that sort of, all those expectations are society-based and society-made, right? Like, we tell men how they should behave and how they should look and how they should feel, and they shouldn't cry and they shouldn't do this. We tell women, you know, what to wear, what colors they're supposed to be assigned, how they behave in society. You know what I mean? So it really is all behavioral and sort of dictated by the people around you. But that doesn't mean that, you know, some days I wake up, I don't feel like mask, you know, or super femme or whatever it is. I feel like, you know, there's days when I want to present a certain way, and there's days that I want to present a different way. And, you know, you kind of are able to sort of, you know, flow in between the expectations of what society has put on us. That is very much the same thing that happened, you know, with sexuality years ago, where it was like, oh, you're either gay or you're straight, and there's nothing else. You know, bisexuality doesn't exist, nothing else in between exists, which is absurd, right? And so that's pretty much the same premise that happens with gender.
And so for yourself, was it just more kind of like deconstructing what society has told you and those labels, or was it something, or was it something else? Was it something that you felt within?
I think maybe it's a little bit of both, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously it does come from like an internal place of, you know, again, I always sort of was interested in the other and like gender play from like an early age. Like, even I, like, honestly, this is even part of like Egyptian culture. I forget what the parties, the name of the party is called, but it's like a party when you're kids and your parents literally make you dress like the opposite sex. And it's the most bizarre thing for me, because I'm like, it's, you know, rooted in like Muslim and, you know, culture, yet you're allowed to present in a different way, but because you're a child, you get away with it. And because it's like making fun of, you can get away with it, you know?
Very cool. So, if, you know, our parents, or at least Egyptian parents, cultivated drag culture right from the beginning.
Exactly, you know?
I love it.
I remember watching, there's a comedian, his name was Zakaria Zakaria, mm-hmm. on Ramadan, during the Ramadan series. And he was this like big guy who used to dress as this like frisky, like Egyptian woman in drag. And like, that was his thing, but it was like a comedy show. You know, so it's funny because drag does exist in the Middle East.
It's true.
But it's not like sort of like sexualized in the way that like, oh, this person must be queer because they do drag. No, he was a straight man that was doing drag.
It's a performance.
Performance.
I exactly. do remember the first drag I've ever seen in my life was on TV, and it was it, I forgot this person's name, but he used to do, or she used to do Shakira impersonation, Sabah.
I don't think that's the person.
I'm going to try to find that person and send that person to you.
Because
I remember even growing up seeing that, and I was like, okay, very cool. It was a very, and these are things when you see a kind of like, when you see representation, when you see different things, you also open your mind and your eyes into like, there is different people in the world, and mm-hmm. not everyone's the same. And that's in itself the beauty of diversity and living and existing.
Exactly. Yeah.
I love that a lot. And I wanted to just go, I wanted to ask more about kind of like who you are.
Okay.
You know, you're a halal queen. You know, you have, you know, this really cool image. Is your non-drag self similar to the halal queen?
I mean, a little bit. I'm definitely, you know, I still carry the same sort of, you know, belief systems. And I think it's, halal is just an exaggerated version of who I am outside of drag. You know, she's the sort of the mask that allows me to say what I want, to be upfront about it, mm-hmm. and not feel, you know, silenced. She gives me the platform to be able to actually change people's minds. Because if I just did that, you know, out of drag, it wouldn't be as impactful, and I wouldn't even necessarily have a platform to be able to talk about the issues that I want to talk about, you know?
So would you say drag is more of like your brand, and it's a way you can communicate to the world?
Yeah, I mean, definitely now it's become a brand, right? Because like being on TV and like having a, you know, a following and stuff like that. Yeah, you're obviously, I've become a brand. But I think that before that, it was very much just like, you know, a tool to express artistry and to express criticism of societal structures and political views and stuff like that. And I think that, it, you know, halal just gave me that courage and that like, yeah, that really that push to be able to do that, you know?
I find that very fascinating because like sometimes you see performers or of any kind, mm-hmm. they have their own persona on stage, and then they're, you know, who they are behind closed doors could be a completely different person.
Sure.
I feel like with you, it's more or less the same, but it's one vehicle to express yourself.
Yeah, there's definitely drag performers that it's like, yeah, they're completely, they put on a character, they're this mm-hmm. person, whatever. Yeah. That's not the case for me. I very much am this person, just on a much more subdued level, mm-hmm. and like not as outgoing. But yeah, that's very much me though.
So I really appreciate that. And so for those who might come from a certain ethnic background, who might be struggling with their own gender identity, mm-hmm. or sexuality, what advice would you have for them?
I think that my biggest advice for them is to really dig deep and understand, you know, who you are and what you really want, and place yourself with people who are going to accept you for that. Seek out people who you have commonalities with, you know, that you may be able to ask questions to, that may be able to guide you or whatever, you know. I think that that's really important. I think that having sort of a queer elder or somebody in that space, yeah, to be able to kind of help you navigate your, you know, your situation.
Absolutely. So having a supportive environment, yeah, and inclusive and a safe environment. I love that word, a queer elder. Mm-hmm. So did you have someone who was kind of guiding you, like an older individual who happens
to be? No, unfortunately, I didn't. But, you know, again, like at least I had my chosen family. But I know a lot of people who have had, you know, like an uncle or like a friend or a whatever who was, you know, a little bit older, who was able to, you know, guide them through how they were feeling, seeing what kind of, you know, paths they can take. There's actually, I volunteer at a place called SOY here in Toronto. It's called Support Our Youth. And it's very much like a big brother, big sister kind of program, but for queer youth. And they kind of match you up with somebody who has gone, like, who has had similar life experiences, you know? So I've had the pleasure of mentoring people who are like, you know, come from a Muslim family from Pakistan, who like, you know, they left the house and whatever. And just having that interaction with them, mentorship, like on a weekly, it was, you know, for them, it was great. You know, it made them feel safe and made them feel valued. And that's really why I do what I do, because I didn't have that, you know? And so I'm just hoping that we can have a new generation of people that are able to have that person that they can look up to and be like, you know what, I can do that. You know?
Giving back is very important. I feel like in whatever way, in whatever shape or form, it's the acts of service is what keeps us, I wouldn't just say happy, but even like satisfied and feeling fulfilled.
Yeah, for sure.
And for those who might not be as lucky to have parents who are supportive, or, you know, an environment where they feel safe, what advice would you say to them?
Whew. I mean, that's a really tough one, because yeah, not having a safe environment is key, right, to growth and to being happy. Mm-hmm. Honestly, I mean, if you don't have that environment, then go out and seek it.
Like, find it.
Go out and find it wherever that may be, because you're not going to grow wherever you are, and you're going to, you know, feel miserable. And yeah.
Yeah. And I think that applies for everyone, really. It's whatever you identify, whatever community you're in, whether you're feeling, if you're in an environment where you don't feel safe, how much can you grow?
Yeah.
Right.
That's it.
It's in a way, it's kind of like that. Is it the Maslow hierarchy? You know, at first you kind of like have,
I guess,
right? I don't know, just being a nerd and like going from like a first year business class, just like, you know, you first got the survival.
I took a business course. Yeah.
Love it. But it's very true. Like, we need to kind of like fulfill those very basic needs, and being in an environment where we feel safe and where we can prosper. Mm-hmm. What I appreciate exactly what you just said right now is that you're trying to create that for people.
Yeah.
So even if it's not there, you're putting yourself out there, helping, mentoring.
That's it. Yeah. And that's the part about giving back, right? Like, you know, I'm in my mid 30s now. And so I'm like, okay, I can do something, you know, I can like show younger queer folk like what life you can have if you mm-hmm. want it, you know, especially people from our community. So I'm really proud. Like, that's the most thing that I'm proud of, doing what I do.
Being in Canada, a lot of people see Arabs or Middle Eastern folks in one light. They don't really see, you know, people from our community who might be represented or express themselves differently, such as yourself.
Right.
Right. What stereotype do you find that you come across as a queer Arab or Middle Eastern individual?
Ooh. I mean, I've definitely, you know, experienced forms of racism living in Canada, especially when I had like a beard or something like that. You know, you get like the ISIS comments or the whatever mm-hmm. comments, you know. But, you know, at the same time, like, you also have this like other part of like interaction where because you're queer, then it's always like, oh, but like, how are you, you know, how do you look like this and do that when you come from such a place, you know? And they kind of like, again, see you as sort of like, I don't know, I guess like backwards or like old fashioned or whatever it is, you know? And so for them, I think like when they start seeing us as different as we are, I think it sort of, it messes with their perception of what that world is, you know, and how we're very much more alike than we are different. But I think it's still a process and it's going to take some time.
Hashtag representation matters.
Yeah. And, T.
Well, yeah. One of my favorite quotes is, I think actually that's like Yellow Listock's mission statement. So it's not even a quote.
Okay.
Is as diverse as the world is, the narrative is not. And we are here to change it. And seeing you and, you know, the power for you to be seen means people can then see themselves and hopefully inspire more people to live authentically, whether they happen to be queer, whether they just happen to have something that, you know, that they want to do, but they don't want to do because of feeling X, Y, Z.
Yeah.
So thank you very much. And I think just to kind of like summarize a lot of what you said, we talked here a lot about celebrating and accepting your gender identity and how do you become aware and what to do afterwards and creating that safe environment. And if you don't have that, seeking it.
Mm-hmm.
Everything you've mentioned here, I really hope people can take away and it can resonate and people can grow from it. So thank you so much.